listen till my horse tired through darts and balloons till I won. And I drank all the lemonade, drove bumper cars till it seemed like I owned the whole bar. And wherever I went, well, I shook every hand. I said, welcome to my wonderland. I said, welcome to our wonderland. The Rule Book and Calendar of Kittery Embers. Chapter 5. The Enormous Chair. There were rattles and clicks from the cooling metal parts of the train. Through the scratch in her window, Kittery could see white breaths lashing out from beneath the stilled passenger car. If this were a real train, the sort that required tickets and took you to a place you wanted to go, she guessed she would have stood, taken her suitcase, headed for the door. But this was not that sort of train. There were no tickets, and Kittery had never heard of Meadowlark. As much as she could do without being noticed, she stayed aware of her books. After announcing their arrival, the tall man in the doorway had dropped them carelessly to the floor. He needed both hands, apparently, to remove his hat. With agonizing slowness, as though swimming in thick mud, he raised both hands to the brim of his hat. As suddenly as he could manage, he then dove into her cabin, slapping and pushing at the hat as though it were attacking him. There was a sharp, popping noise as the heavy hat finally crashed to the floor. The man staggered back, gasping for air. "Not for the faint of heart, eh, Archie?" he said. He drove a comb of fingers into the bramble of his silver-black hair and dropped into the doorframe to rest. "Say, if you need help," the man continued. "I know you like to do it alone, but they've gotten heavier." The second man, who must be Archie, made a choking noise and rolled like a rug across the floor, away from Kittery's view. Kittery listened closely, absorbing the changes. The man's voice was much lighter now, still smoky, but with a musical tone, with a warm, dry humor. Her books were out of view now, on the other side of his seated body. "Should have sold them together, like you said. But who would do the work? Certainly not Mrs. Gramshaw, and I'm no hand at stitching," the man continued. "I'm McIntosh," he said, staring at the rug. "Mr. McIntosh, if you like, but Muck is fine." He smiled brightly in her direction, eyes tight, as if part of him was not comfortable with merriness. "Mr. McIntosh." Kittery tried the name out, wrinkling her nose. "Course, some don't like to say Muck. Consider it a foul or unseemly word. But then, some like speed. It's up to you, obviously." His thin face was grizzled and grey. The longer silver flourish of his hair did nothing to soften the rocky brow or stone-cut jaw. "I'll just unwear myself of this olden jacket here, and we'll get you sorted," he said. He split the coat at the chest and began to shrug forward, as though cinching through a crevasse. When one arm finally plucked free of the sleeve, Mr. McIntosh swung it around to get the blood flowing. Kittery heard the humming first, the sound coming from outside the train, three long notes that didn't quite complete a melody. The fragment rankled for missing its obvious final note. But the voice itself was pretty, a woman's voice, sweet and carefully trembling. Kittery peered through her scratch, but saw nothing. Two bangs struck out against the roof, followed by a hollow shuffle as the humming woman stepped aboard the train. "Mrs. Gramshaw will take it from here," Mr. McIntosh said. A huge white screen swung into position behind Mr. McIntosh. It took a moment for Kittery to see that it was not a screen, but the spreading dress of a very tall woman. Her head was hidden well above the lintel. The tall woman folded down over Muck and smiled into Kittery's cabin. Her sunflower face was enclosed in an orange bonnet. "Hello," she said softly, and then squinted, unable to see Kittery in the dark. "Why no lights on, Mr. McIntosh?" the woman asked, with exaggerated concern. Mr. McIntosh sighed. "Heavy gear," was all he said. The tall woman tisked with regret and then flipped on the orange holiday lights. "What would you do without me?" Mrs. Gramshaw asked. "Dribble down some hole and perish?" Muck guessed. "You might not even dribble, just perish right near the opening, anyway." Mrs. Gramshaw turned her attention back to Kittery. "I'm sure it was all terribly frightening. Darkness, painted train, a night journey, bad weather, books confiscated. But it was all required. Outside the lock, such secret travelling is necessary. I'm sure Mr. McIntosh told you all about it." "Actually," Muck started, before Kittery could answer, "Archie and I could hardly stand, let alone concern ourselves with any idle chit-chat." The tall woman fixed darkly on Muck. "Mr. McIntosh, would you be so kind as to do my introductions?" Mrs. Gramshaw said. "Oh," he said, "sorry. This is Mrs. Keepsie Gramshaw, head housekeeper at Meadowlark. She'll look after your clothes and such," Muck said, not altogether willingly. "And meals," Mrs. Gramshaw added. "Lunch and snacks, of course." Mrs. Gramshaw selected a finger for each of her duties. "Bedding and stories and entertainments and travels around the grounds." Mrs. Gramshaw launched representative fingers in all directions. Even the word "and" was spoken as though it were a task in itself. "The work of 100 men or 4 ladies or 1 Mrs. Keepsie Gramshaw," Mr. McIntosh said, smiling confidentially to Kittery. She liked how the older man's eyes closed when he smiled, like he was trying to do an impression of the sun for a newborn. Archie, who'd been lapping soft waves against the far wall, moaned for attention. Muck flipped to his feet so quickly, the giraffe-like housekeeper spindled forward into the sudden vacancy. Free of his hat and jacket, Muck moved like a wild tiger. He spun a blur of circles around Archie, propping him here, bending him there, until Archie was raised into a sad pile. With Archie firm against his knees, both men went to work on the heavy hat. Muck set his spine and counted, 1, 2, 3, and both of them lifted furiously as Archie timbered forward. When the hat brim hit the floor, Muck rolled around and heaved Archie back by the waist. The hat popped off with a rush of wind and then wobbled to rest on the floor like a great stone wheel. "That's your last trip out of the lock," Muck commented. He patted Archie's soaked blonde hair and then helped him escape from his jacket. Kittery sat forward, astonished. With the hat and jacket removed, Archie looked incredibly small. "This is my son," Muck said. "Archie McIntosh, even though I've already said it 4 times." Muck put an arm proudly around the small boy, as though Kittery might take their picture. Archie permitted himself an embarrassed smile, and then shrugged his father's arm away. "Boots," was all the boy said. "Boots, ah, yes," Muck shouted. He kneeled, wrapped both arms around his son's waist, and then plucked him upward like a pylon. The boy's bruised feet pulled free of the black boots to the sound of sucking mud. You two run and wash, Mrs. Gramshaw ordered, pinching her nose. You smell like fish on a foggy day. The train dipped as father and son dropped down the metal stairs. Mrs. Gramshaw smiled at the seeming pleasure of their being alone and then crawled into Kittery's cabin like a spider into a small box. Her great, long steps swished layers of dress in sailing arcs. My books, Kittery suddenly said. She noticed they were no longer on the floor where Mr. McIntosh had dropped them. We'll just have someone look at them first, an expert, Mrs. Gramshaw said, bending over her. But we must be off now. Partial Minister Battlegrass is waiting. The tall housekeeper struck out her hand, as though they were at the very start of a merry adventure, in which hand-holding would be a main feature. Rudyard Battlegrass? The housekeeper tried the name again. Never heard of him? Kittery shook her head no, and the housekeeper's sunflower face eclipsed with confusion. Well, I thought you might already know. I told him he had every right to expect that you would. It's actually rather shocking that you don't, Mrs. Gramshaw said, tilting toward her with a slight vinegar. But Partial Minister Battlegrass, Rudyard Battlegrass, is your grandfather.
Right there. messing around.
Kittery's eyes dialed shut to block the pale glare as they stepped off the train. A strange kind of bright, Mrs. Gramshaw said, her voice sneering at the sky. The brutal sort that casts more shadow spots than light spots and burns the eyes all the while. When Kittery could finally tolerate the pearly shine, she saw that Mrs. Gramshaw had pulled on a pair of aviator goggles. "Only the one set, I'm afraid," the housekeeper whispered, revealing her sense that bad news should be delivered quietly so as to exist in the least possible way. Mrs. Gramshaw tugged Kittery's hand, and they set off across the trimmed grass. The air hung lifeless above the lime-coloured landscape. Struck stale, the air of a closet. Kittery wondered if the black walls enclosing the castle grounds somehow prevented the wind from entering Meadowlark. "There are many ways out," Mrs. Gramshaw said, noticing Kittery's interest. "I know it looks like a prison, but there are hundreds of little paths, even a road, in addition to the tracks, and all manner of caves and secret ways. So it's not like we can't get out." Mrs. Gramshaw laughed at the notion. "So you do go outside?" Kittery asked. "Well, not outside the lock itself, though in theory I'm sure I could, despite what Mr. McIntosh reports. And of course I do travel. I regularly shop in the village, and once a week I go to Tamerlane. I teach a class on shoes." She said the last part proudly, as though Kittery would naturally be impressed by a shoe teacher. Mrs. Gramshaw lifted the complex volume of her aprons and dresses to reveal two cream silk ballet slippers. "Yes, I made these. I call them Gram shoes," she said, delighted with the name. She skipped a little to show the sorts of twinkling feats that might be undertaken in Gram shoes. Before Kittery got a good look at them, the tall housekeeper swept the girl into her arms. There was a giddy moment when Kittery thought they might be engaging in a short dance done in honor of the Gram shoes. But the housekeeper's grip tightened. "You are simply too weak to continue walking, my dear," Mrs. Gramshaw said, and set off at a rapid pace. Kittery nearly protested, but felt something poking sharply at her ribs. Mrs. Gramshaw had evidently slid her books into some secret recess in her garments. As they entered the grotto, Kittery observed the passing line of four demolished-looking white trees. What happened to them? Kittery wondered.
"Squashed,"
Mrs. Gramshaw said.
"By what?"
Kittery asked.
"Squashers,"
the housekeeper said shortly. It was hard to tell if Mrs. Gramshaw's fatigue enforced this brevity, or whether she simply didn't know. Kittery examined the orderly white wreckage as they passed. There was something artful in the way the sticks and branches hung together. A design or purpose in the breakage. While every limb had been shattered, yet the broken pieces dangled from their point of ruin. Not a single branch had fallen to the ground.
"Unsolved puzzles,"
Mrs. Gramshaw huffed by way of follow-up. The tall woman accelerated, her long legs lifting into an awkward jog. In the near distance, the disk of a previously unseen black pond opened against the limy flats. Perfectly circular and still, as they jogged by, Kittery counted four brown ducks on the surface. She smiled, relieved by the presence of wildlife.
"Fake,"
Mrs. Gramshaw whispered.
"Fake,"
Kittery echoed. She stared at the slowly turning imitations. Falling into the dark water from the belly of each was a descending rod, which twirled and fidgeted the ducks across the pond's surface in a passably realistic way. Beyond the pond, the The white pebble path spilled into a rotary. At the edges of the circular park were four shapeless onyx statues. Their blocky torsos showed the spiky guts of freshly split rock. Yet each statue also had a polished, smooth saddle.
No idea, don't ask,
Mrs. Gramshaw said, her voice stretched with exhaustion. Kittery shivered as a prickling static plucked at her skin. Mrs. Gramshaw responded quickly, running a detour into the deeper grass to give a wide berth to the sculpture park.
We call them the horses, Mrs. Gramshaw commented. They make a bit of a bomb noise, occasionally a bolt of lightning. Bit of static, you'll feel. Stay away's the rule.
Mrs. Gramshaw wheezed and quickened her pace as they rejoined the white pebble path on the far side of the park. Though they'd been travelling over the green grounds for some time, Meadowlark did not appear to be any closer. Kittery cast a look over Mrs. Gramshaw's shoulder to see how far they'd come.
Mrs. Gramshaw,
Kittery whispered with alert. A dizzying nausea swarmed up from the back of her head. The train, which should be small and barely visible at this point, stood directly behind them, not 10 yards away. It was as though they hadn't even left. Yet the Grotto of Broken Trees and the Black Pond and Sculpture Park had all assumed a cramped position within the dreamily flattened background. Before Kittery could ask about the illusion, Mrs. Gramshaw burst into a full run, her aprons blowing out like wild sails. There was a sudden leaping upwards and then a quiet, windless zooming. Mrs. Gramshaw stopped running. She stood, her chest heaving to catch up to the needs of her lungs. But yet, the housekeeper's dress and aprons continued to flap wildly. Kittery pushed the edges of the silky dress from her face and drew a sharp breath when she saw the castle grounds scrolling swiftly below them.
Don't call it flying,
Mrs. Gramshaw whispered roughly.
It's just a good jump, is all.
The Gramshaws definitely help, though try getting Mr. Mockintosh into a pair. They descended in a slow arc, leaning with long silver shines, a series of thin, razor-bright ladders rose along the cliffs. Midway up the final ladder, Kittery saw two small figures inching over the rungs.
Oh, there's Muck and Archie, Mrs. Gramshaw said.
Course the Gramshaws would have helped them both.
Takes a few days to decompress after going outside the lock.
The housekeeper's left leg drifted to a side, and her cream silk slipper began to paddle the air. The delicate motion created a minor spin that more fully turned them toward the jagged, smoking peaks of the castle.
Oh,
Mrs. Gramshaw said sadly.
Overshot it. Good jumps always trick. So promising at first, and then you're slamming into walls. Ah, well, can't be helped. We'll have to set you down at speed, Kittery. Legs out, fingers in, deep breath, eyes shut.
Mrs. Gramshaw released one arm, and Kittery's legs dropped out below her toward the accelerating black ground.
Eyes shut,
Kittery shouted, but her voice was muted, cupped shut, as though the sound of her voice had died the moment it left her lips.
Here we go,
Mrs. Gramshaw called, lowering her toward the glinting dark plateau. Kittery lifted her toes, her eyes closed without effort. Her right foot skimmed into the cinders, and then her knees crushed down as Mrs. Gramshaw released her. The housekeeper sailed on, jet-like, overhead. There was a bobbling everywhereness of being shook inside a bag, crashing endlessly into soft walls. And then, in an almost backwards-going moment, it was over. Kittery was standing, waist-deep, in fluffy black stones. Somehow, without any likely transition from fast to slow, she'd come to an absolute stop. In the distance, Mrs. Gramshaw landed neatly, right before the smoking wall of Meadowlark. The housekeeper dusted off her dresses and pulled Kittery's rule book and diary from the secret interior pocket. Mrs. Gramshaw took a deep breath, pinched her nose shut, appeared to mumble a prayer, and then shot down into the black cinders, as though a trap door had opened beneath her. Kittery struggled up through the airy stones. She moved easily enough. In fact, there seemed to be an upward coaxing, as though the ground itself had come to her assistance. When she'd managed to get to the ground level, the black cinders seemed to harden beneath her feet. She took a few slow steps toward the wooden chair. Its four massive legs entered the dark ground with a spreading knob of roots. Once upon a time, these chair legs had been trees. Her gaze lifted. 20 feet above her, a pair of parchment pale feet with dirty soles dangled from the seat edge. The feet of partial Minister Battlegrass. She did not believe he was actually her grandfather. The dreaminess of Meadowlark, in fact, the dreaminess of the last number of days, had rendered her passive. She felt unable to decide or judge anything. She wandered into the space beneath the chair. On the nearest tree leg, she noticed a makeshift ladder of sticks and former branch knobs, conveying a possible route to the seat above. She set her hands and feet on loose, half-rotten rungs and began to climb. "Don't go up," a waterlogged voice called. She turned to find Archie rushing toward the ladder, with Muck following close behind. Archie lifted a hand to help her back down. She tried to ask him why she shouldn't go up, but the sound of her voice once again died in her mouth. She tried again, but no noise seemed possible. Instead, a draping electric hum gathered coolly over her face. "Speak slowly. Try to whisper," Archie said, putting the advice into clear action. The boy mounted the ladder and flew quickly up. Muck smiled as he passed her, eyes closed, reaching for the first rung. "Does he know I'm here?" Kittery asked, speaking each word slowly and softly, trying the method. But her voice struggled in the air, and once again fell back in a hum against her face. She asked the question again, slower, quieter. It was like pushing a pillow into a small slot. "Does he know I'm here?" she said again, this time feeling the success of sound like a key turning a lock. "Of course I do." A new voice lobbed toward her. An old man with a silver toss of hair strode forward, brushing cinders from his dark suit. "I think you know who I am," the partial minister said, smiling with a grandfatherly warmth. But if this was her grandfather, Kittery wondered, whose dirty old feet were dangling from the seat edge 20 feet above them? Thank you. Kittery stared at the filthy feet. She watched them shiver and twitch, and then one foot slowly rose. She could hear Muck and Archie's helping voices, and Kittery thought they must be assisting the old chair-sitter into standing. Her trouble was that she'd found the dangling feet, curiously familiar. Instantly, by their encouraging shape, she'd been convinced of a family connection. The long, curling toes were like her mother's, the boxed ankles like her father's. Even the high, arched, dirty soles reminded her of her own feet. Kittery backed out from beneath the chair to get a better view of the action and the mysterious person above. "I don't think you'll wish to know this now," the partial minister said, his voice strained with warning as he moved quickly toward her. She saw Muck first, his hard, narrow face, and then Archie as she stepped further away. Between the prop of their arms, they lifted an incredibly frail old woman. She wore a tattered dress, and her mop of dirty white hair fell in all directions across her face. The old woman seemed to be elbowing her two assistants away, and after a quick glance, both Archie and Muck released her. She shifted her weight from right foot to left, either trying to walk or assembling a fresh sense of balance. After a moment testing her skills at standing, the old woman's fingers went to her brow as she began to clear away the falling locks of dirty hair, like an intrepid gardener clearing sticks from the lawn after a windstorm. When she tucked the final strands of grey behind her ears, she took a few ginger steps forward and then peered down at Kittery. "I see you've brought your friends," she said. Her voice was like a scratch of glass. She was not smiling, and her dead expression perfectly matched the lifeless qualities of the air. "Terrible moment," the old woman said. There was some delay, and the gesture was hardly there, but Kittery saw a single crooked finger angling into the yellow sky. But when Kittery looked, she saw only a steady bank of burned clouds glowing in the lemon light. The woman's arm shot upward, and the ground trembled and blurred. A razor-thin bolt of lightning shined its blue release and shot suddenly upward from the distant sculpture park. A moment later, a single loud explosion rolled around the air. At the point at which the lightning dissolved in the sky, there was a single bright instant when she saw the woodpecker's sword-like edges, when her eyes gathered over the small, dangling shape of a familiar mouse held in the bird's claws. But then the woodpecker suddenly dropped, its wings ragged and wrong, as it fell fast toward the ground. Kittery reached her hands helplessly forward as the bird slammed into a faraway pasture. Kittery suddenly knew the old woman had done this, had shot the vicious bolt of lightning into the sky. "Once upon a time," the old woman growled, "I was a little girl, and I came here to Meadowlark to set things straight. Are you such a little girl who once upon a time came to Meadowlark to set things straight?" The woman leaned wickedly over the edge of the chair, arms spread as though she were falling through the sky. "Terrible moment," the old witch shouted, the sound burning against her dry throat. Kittery felt the partial minister suddenly crouching behind her. He enclosed her in his firm grip, both arms wrapping around her tight. She fought against his jailing arms, but could not avert her eyes from the ruined, familiar face above, the crooked smile, the ugly, twisted eyes. So wrong, so wicked, and yet so familiar. "We have to go now, Kittery," the partial minister roared into her ear. She could feel him hauling her down with all his might. The cold stones rolled against her legs and filled her hands, and the ground dissolved beneath her feet. But Kittery launched herself against the descent and fought back for the surface. the old man cried out, as though her efforts inflicted pain. "We have to go now," the partial minister shouted miserably. "Tell me who it is," Kittery said in a dead whisper. "Inside, Kittery," the old man begged, tugging and pulling her toward the dark stones. Kittery set her eyes directly on his, and very quietly, and as directly as she could, she said, "Tell me now, and then we can go." The old man's face darkened. His mouth fell open wordlessly, and then he said, "It is you, my dear. The old woman on the chair above is you." Kittery closed her eyes and released herself to her grandfather's embrace, and they shot together down into the blackness of the earth. I walked down the path through the woods, the falling snow, my neighbor, black as ice, a silver